Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome to the 33rd episode of Why Are People Into That? The podcast with rising action, a climax, and, of course, a denouement. I hope you enjoyed the two-part Year in Sex crossover episode with Susie Q of The Whorecast and Sam Solo of On Your Face. This is the first official episode of the third season, and there are big changes coming in 2016. I've got some new microphones, thanks to my friend Donnie Service, and we are joining the Whorecast Network with some other big announcements coming down the pike, so stay tuned. In the meantime, join the gaggle of adorable perverts who have already signed up for my Patreon. You know how a couple of people trickle into the party and then all of a sudden everybody shows up to the party? I want my fan club to be like that. Join for as little as $1 a month at patreon.com/TinaHorn. That's patreon.com/TinaHorn. My guest for this episode is Milka Halili, a really talented writer and cam performer. I recently saw them read at the Coming Out Like a Porn Star party at Blue Stockings here in New York City, and they totally owned the place. So, make sure you're all tucked in for Why Are People Into Stories. How's it going? Can I just say my guest today is drinking tap water out of an empty fifth of bullet bourbon on this beautiful sunny Sunday morning.
It's just the perfect size.
Yeah, absolutely. Does it have the faintest taint of bourbon in it, or
it used to have the tiniest taint, but I took out the cork, so
I see.
That's where most of it was.
Oh, interesting. Hi, thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Will you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Sure. These days, I just moved to Brooklyn from California, from the Bay Area. I've been there all my life, and now I'm here. And I moved here to focus a lot more on my writing.
Cool. That's why I moved here from the Bay Area. Yeah. So we already have that in common. Oh, cool. So tell me about your writing.
Yeah. It's mostly creative nonfiction. Recently, I've been getting more interested in copywriting and technical blogging, like how-tos for people.
Nice. Cool. That's very sensible.
Yeah.
And creative nonfiction, I don't know if I'm going to retire on creative nonfiction, so... but there's, you know, lots of reasons to think about, to move to Brooklyn to become a writer besides making a living doing it. There has to be, there ought to be.
Yeah.
So, what kinds of creative nonfiction do you like to write about?
Mostly I write about my experiences in porn and also in publishing spaces.
Mm.
I see a lot of similarities.
Interesting.
As my friend Joel Hewler, he's a poet, he said to me that being on stage, you know, reading is the same thing as being naked.
Mm.
So I see that comparison, that parallel. And it's also interesting being a queer person of color in those spaces that are predominantly white and cis. So I write a lot about navigating that as well.
And that is one of the reasons that I love your writing. So I would love to hear more about your work, but let's narrow in on our topic today, because yes. I think there's going to be overlap between those two things. So what you wanted to talk about today is, why are people into stories, or why are people into narratives? And tell me a little bit about why that was the thing that you wanted to talk about.
Sure. For me, stories have really informed my sexuality. It's actually how I got into porn mm-hmm. and sex work to begin with. I identified as an asexual sex worker, and through sex work and primarily digging for people's stories prior to connecting with them in a professional setting, when I would do that, when I would dig for stories or narratives, I would feel more connected in the professional space and be able to perform or give a better service that
mm-hmm.
way.
Mm-hmm. I like the way you say that. Because it is about performance and service. That's where the work comes in. So you're performing a fantasy that is often curated live, you know, so it's ad-libbed.
Yeah.
Or improvised. But you're also providing the service of that fantasy, and your performance becomes something that is not just curated as a work of art, but curated as emotional service, psychological service, and just straight up like the sexual satisfaction. I mean, depending on the client, it could be any combination of those or some other motivation, right?
Yes, yes. With clients, and also I feel like on porn sets, like some of the most satisfying sex I've had were with people whose stories that I already shared and had built a rapport with.
Mm-hmm.
And also with my clients, I tend to get people who don't just want, like, an exotic-looking Asian female body person
That word, exotic.
Yes, exactly. To engage with them, it's more of like, hey, I've read your stories, and that, for me, informs how I sexualize this experience.
Oh, that's so interesting. You know, do you think that is more true for sex workers? Can I ask, like, in general, like, within 5 years, like, how old you are?
Oh.
Or you can say how old you are.
Yes. I'm 26.
Okay, you're 26. So I'm 33.
Yeah.
And I feel like, and I started doing client-based sex work when I was 24, also in the Bay Area, and I feel like probably because of social media and just the saturation and density of what is available on the internet and through media and information sharing with sexually explicit media, that sex workers are allowed and expected, that's sort of like the double side of the coin, to have more of a complex personality and have more of what they're selling be a personality that is always available, or like the veneer of it is always available and always on. And that a client might be more inclined to want to hire you because they see your weirdness behind the scenes, and they feel like they have a sense of your wild, queer, slutty life, whatever their perception of it is based on what you're putting out there. Whereas when I was a baby hoe in the, like, mid-aughts,
partially, this is partially true just because of the house that I came up in and the community that I came up in, and my own personal ways of becoming a sex worker sustainably, but, like, I was expected at all of the houses that I worked in to keep my privacy really, really, to keep those lines drawn really clearly, mm-hmm. and to not give clients a sense of, for example, my writing or mm-hmm. what I was putting out in the world under different names and different personas about being queer, about having ideas that might be different from the ideas that I might espouse in session while I'm being paid. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And so do you, is any of this like ringing a bell? Like, do you think that this has changed at all? Have you seen a change in the time you've been in the industry?
I mean, I wasn't following you around when you were baby ho, but, you know, like, I can, just from what you're saying and my experience of it, I feel like media right now, like, with the advent of the internet getting all up in everybody's feelings now.
Oh my god, yes, not just their business, but their feelings.
Their feelings, yeah. There's just such a saturation of, like, emotionally taboo things being published right now that...
That's right.
Like, you know, big whoop.
No, totally. So you feel like people are not easily shocked by just, oh my god, I'm telling you a person online! Like, mm. that used to be, like, so much.
Yeah.
And now, like, the internet is not in puberty anymore where you can just make out and feel, like, fireworks going off. Like,
yep.
Every time. Yeah, or not. Right.
And we're not in AOL, you know, chat rooms asking age, sex, location. We're in video chat rooms, Google
That's
Hangouts,
right.
Tiny Chat, having conversations, doing readings.
Right, right. And a lot of, I mean, even just the fact that, of course, sex work moves with technology,
mm-hmm.
And often guides technology,
yes.
et cetera, et cetera. It's like a cliche at this point. But when you have things like Snapchat, mm-hmm. you know, then you think about what Snapchat means for sex workers. And for example, the only reason that I use Snapchat is to follow my sex worker friends who let me follow them for free, whereas they will charge somebody else, like, $20 for access, or it'll be part of their Patreon or part of their, like, something, like, if you are, like, part of their, like, membership or, like, fan club, one of the things that you get is access to their Snapchat, and then it's just a constant story that they're telling, right? I mean,
yes.
It even calls it stories in Snapchat, doesn't it? Like, like my story.
I don't know. I don't use Snapchat, but I believe it.
I feel like you would make some interesting things on Snapchat, and then you should screenshot them and then put them up in a higher gallery and make a bunch of money. So that's my tip for you.
Thank you.
So what role do... Okay, so the fact that your clients are interested in the stories that you are telling, sort of behind the scenes, as it were, and not just on the platform that they can, the sex work platform that they can pay for. And that ends up being sort of part of it. It ends up being good for business and contributes to your brand, right?
Yes.
Is what you're saying? Mm-hmm. So what kinds of stories are they?
They're creative nonfiction stories, actually.
Yeah.
I've learned how to make a craft out of my life,
mm-hmm.
I guess you could say. It's actually like a place where I can just meditate on who I want to be,
mm-hmm.
and then I can soundboard it off on my clients almost.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Like, so I started off as this asexual, queer, but not really loud about it, femme drag person.
Yeah.
The problem was I was femme dragging all the time. I didn't have, like, a distinct, like, this is me in my professional life and this is me in my private life.
Why was that a problem?
I think trauma and post-traumatic stress. Like,
mm-hmm.
I grew up very gender fluid and I was surrounded by a lot of boys and violence.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I had internalized a lot of that. And just, like, growing up being catcalled, like, having dudes trying to pimp me out, like, faced with violence all the time. And being the kind of person who at some point, you know, hit their girlfriend because they couldn't manage their anger, like, yeah. having internalized all the misogyny. I think I just trying to survive as a queer person of color from the burbs of the hood, like, there were just only so many things on the hierarchy of, like, problems that I had that I could, felt like I could manage. So I just felt like, hey, if I femme drag and if I appear more femme, then I could make a lot more money at a faster rate and then proceed to get whatever, like, get out of whatever pickle I was in. So
did you feel like your drag was a story that you were telling your clients?
Yeah. And it was also at some point, because stories inform how we, you know, express and identify in the world, at least for me. I also told myself this story, and it became me, even though deep down it wasn't necessarily how I felt.
Mm-hmm. Right, so you were dressing high femme all the time, and yeah. so you were telling yourself the same story that you were telling your clients.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
But has that changed?
Well, yeah, yeah. So I don't perceive myself as, or I don't identify necessarily with being asexual anymore. I feel way more demisexual in that.
Can you tell me what that means? Or yeah. tell my listeners what demisexual is?
Yeah, for sure. So asexuality is like no sex, no sexual attraction mm-hmm. or drive towards others. And demisexual, in the general terms that it's been used, is when you have a romantic or emotional connection, mm. then there's sexual attraction. For me, it's not so much that. It's more like if I have a shared story with you and a shared history mm. with you, that coupled with like emotional and spiritual sense of safety and trust, mm-hmm. then I will have like a really amazing sexual attraction for someone.
Okay. Interesting. So that's changed, and what about your high femme story? I mean, yeah. can you tell the listeners at home what your sweatshirt that you're wearing says?
It says self-care like a boss.
So good. I want one. cool. As soon as I saw it, that's so great. But how often do you find yourself dressing super high femme these days?
For work, like, I dance at pumps.
Oh, nice. Oh.
Yeah.
I'll find out when you work there.
It's alternative girls, people of color.
Yeah, I mean, a former coworker of mine worked there, and I was always like, I definitely want to go. So I got to make it. Pumps is, it's in Greenpoint? It's
Williamsburg.
Okay, it's in Williamsburg. And yeah. It's not all nude? Is it a topless place?
Yeah, topless.
Topless, yeah. Cool. Well,
yeah. So for pumps, when I do sex work, I sometimes, it depends on what it is. If I'm required to be more femme, then I will show up as femme. But with private clients, private Skype shows, sometimes I'll be androgynous. Mm-hmm. And generally, I like to dress more masculine of center mm-hmm, daily.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So I'm so interested in, you know, there's the general idea of the stories that we tell ourselves in order to live, yeah. according to Joan Didion, right? You know, what we tell ourselves about our identities and where we are in our lives, et cetera, et cetera. And then there's role plays. But then there's also sort of the, when you're connecting with someone sexually, whether they are a client or an intimate acquaintance
yeah.
encounter for a partner, mm-hmm. There's also the story that you're kind of telling each other about your sexual selves, right? So, like, you might meet somebody and their story might be, I'm a daddy top and I'm really into into bondage and genital torture, and you know that's like
yeah
what I like, and then the other person tells their story, and if that story is compatible, or you know, maybe if there's friction, then that is also hot, you know. Yeah. Like an attraction is a mystery, but is that sort of when you were talking about like erotic stories, you know, that was like one of the things that came to my mind, like the sort of the stories that make up our identities and that are based on our gender and our desires and all of these other things, and how those interplay in sexual relationships. Is that, am I like on the right track?
So right. Like, I can give an example, actually.
I would love that.
Yes. So the way that I actually got into porn was that I really wanted kinky sex, and I couldn't find it as hardcore as I wanted in my private life, so I was like, why didn't I just get paid by kink.com to have great sex? So
many, many folks with those intentions have darkened the doors of the armory, for sure, myself included.
Yes, and the way that I had found out about kink.com was I would show up to the Rumpus's monthly readings when they would do them in San Francisco in the makeout room. Yes,
and in the Mission. Yeah.
Yes, and I saw on the website that Lorelai had done an oral history of kink with Stephen Elliott.
Oh, nice.
So. Through there, I don't know, I had a friend who lives in Brooklyn, and he told me that Lorelai was doing writing classes in San Francisco.
Yeah.
So, having read stuff...
I took one, actually. Nice. I took a workshop
with her. Yeah, great. Yeah.
Oh, Lorelai
so
is...
So good.
Yeah, no, she's the man.
Yes, for sure. And having read, you know, those stories online, I was just like, fuck yeah, I want to do this, and maybe this is a way for me to... like, build rapport and trust and find a way to get into the armory. So I took two classes.
I love that your way of getting into the armory was to take a writing class with Lorelai. That tells me a lot about you.
Yeah. I took a creative nonfiction writing class, and then I also took a sex, death, laughter, and disease writing and body.
I took that one too from her. Yeah, in the summer of 2011.
Oh, it murdered my life in the best way. But I did that, and I don't know, it having had that relationship with Lorelai prior to being on set with her, it just made everything so much more intense, and it kind of informed how I wanted to have sex for the rest of my life, because I was just like, well, I just want to have sex with my friends who understand craft and narrative and know how to empathize through art. And yeah, since then it's been a wrap.
You know, that's so funny, because the first time that I shot at kink.com, it was because Lorelai and I were friends and we worked together in a dungeon where we often would be paid to tell people stories in various ways, and yeah, you know, she's very good at shepherding queermos in there and getting us paid a couple of times before somebody's like, ah, this person has too many tattoos, or this person's hair is weirdly configured on their body, or like, this person won't put up with a bunch of bullshit, so we're not gonna cast them anymore. But anyway, so yeah, and I it was the experience of shooting for it was Wired Pussy at the time, a site that's now called Electro Sluts.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, bottoming to her and taking that pain from her, it's like funny to imagine people seeing that video online now, For me, it was all about pleasing Lorelai, and to a certain amount, I think pleasing Donna, and just really like wanting to show up and be like the complete like bottom badass that could fucking take all kinds of pain and torture. What shoot did you, or what site did you do with Lorelai?
Oh my goodness, I know I did Electrosis with her and Public Disgrace, which I actually cover in my memoir that I'm writing.
Nice,
yeah.
Who's publishing that memoir?
So far, just me.
Okay. Are you putting it online?
I'm releasing little teasers of it, and that's working for me right now.
Cool. We're going to talk after the show about that. Yeah, sweet. Cool, so you wrote about doing Public Disgrace. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing about kink, to try to sort of bring it back to wire people into stories. You know, I think that one of the things that is... one of the things that has always attracted me to kinky sex, and also kinky sex work, whether it's strictly sex work or even art about BDSM and themes and et cetera, is that it's sex that foregrounds a story and a narrative, which is why kink.com sites are all so high concept, yeah. Right? The concept is about the character and the dynamic just played out over and over and over again. So if the dynamic that you like is a woman who really wants to be like forced into sex by five guys at the same time, then you can watch Hardbound Gangbangs over and over and over again. And if the narrative that you like is that you really, you know, even if it's a totally fucked up narrative, such as the woman that I thought was a woman is actually, it's still a woman, but she's a trans woman and she's got a big hard dick and she's gonna surprise me and then tie me up and torture me and fuck me in the ass. Mm-hmm. Super problematic, yet very appealing fantasy to many people. Mm-hmm. If that fantasy is gonna be played out, at least it should be played out by a bunch of trans people working behind the scenes and, you know, maybe subverting it in a lot of weird ways. But anyway, not to be an apologist for kink.com, but more just like a general porn apologist.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, so how do you feel about the relationship between kinky sex and the stories that get told in kinky sex?
For me, it's kind of hard to divide the two.
Yeah.
I think because I do come from a more, like, asexual, gray ace background, for me, stories just queer and pervert everything.
Nice.
So, I don't know how those could live without each other.
Mm-hmm. Can you give me an example of a story that you really like?
Yeah, they're kind of really intricate, though.
That's fine.
Okay, so I'll use this. I had a dream this morning, and it was just this completely vivid narrative about you. I had never met you, but you were there in HD during some parts of the dream, and it was just like this like sexualized narrative. Like I can't tell you like details of what happened, but it was just like mostly talking and mostly, I guess, story digging and learning and like figuring out where boundaries are. That's mostly what pops up in my head.
Cool. Oh, I'm flattered.
Creative nonfiction.
I'm all about it. Yeah, I mean, creative nonfiction acknowledges that any nonfiction is, you know, filtered through someone's consciousness and memory and thus fictionalized in that way.
Yeah.
Why do you think other people are attracted to sex that has characters, fantasy, like specific scenarios attached to it, as opposed to, you know, I'm trying to imagine a control group sex, like sex that has no story. I mean, who the people are that are having sex is always going to be inherent in the story, but yeah. You know, there might be stories that are more literal or overwrought or melodramatic mm-hmm. than others. But what do you think the appeal is for people in general? Because it's not just us.
yeah. I really feel like putting stories into sexual fantasies gives people a place to project maybe parts of themselves
mm-hmm.
or like larger than life, or maybe even like more literal parts of themselves, and so that they can feel in a way special
mm-hmm.
and also interconnected. For me, that's how it is, because I feel like my fantasies are so particular, but to see something just as weird, like even if it's not the same narrative or story, just as like intricate and nuanced, for me, it makes me feel less lonely and less freaky.
Mm-hmm. Can you give me an example of, like, sort of, well, I mean, I guess you just did the...
Yeah, well, so for, like, I guess, for, like, my clients, for example, one, like, they tend to do a lot of creative nonfiction with me, too. They'll talk about their lives and their fantasy lives and how they want to become more of, like, their fantasy story, and through reenacting that fantasy story, whether it's like my online slave or one of my fans that just really loves to read my writing and talk about my writing before we jack off together, like,
like, oh my god, that's so cute.
Right? Like, it, I feel like it makes them feel special, because it's not just this, like, you know, like, it's like, create your own adventure, create your own story. It's not just like this fill in the blank and be anybody else. It's this thing that's individualized and personified specifically for them.
Hi everybody, it's Tina here. I'm trying something a little new in 2016, so I hope that you are not too upset or in too much suspense to take a little break from listening to my conversation with Milka Halili. I am going to answer an advice question. This question comes from one of my first patrons on Patreon. And if you want to check out what all of the perks are, you can go to patreon.com/TinaHorn. If you pledge $5, you get to ask me for sex advice and let me know if you're okay with me answering it on the air. And in case you can't tell, I usually am either on this show having a conversation with someone else or reading a script that I've written, so it's a little bit outside my comfort zone to be speaking off the cuff, but I am trying to be more fearless in 2016, just like David Bowie would want me to. So my very first advice question from a patron comes from Chandler. Thank you so much for your amazing question, Chandler. Here goes. Chandler asks, I enjoy frequent rough bottoming in my front hole, and I am a bit of a size queen. What are your recommendations for speedy healing? I find that I have to stop before I want to sometimes, and often I have to turn down partners because I am sore, red, and irritated from the night before. Chandler, I feel your pain. I mean, like, maybe not literally, but figuratively, I feel your pain. So what do you do when you really like rough bottoming and you want to have it more than your body is letting you? The first thing that I would say, and it almost just seems like so obvious that I'm sure that you've thought of it, but the first thing that I want to say is use more lube. If you're not already using lube, please use lube. Lube is amazing. I don't even know where to start singing the praises of lube and all of the different kinds that you can get at your wonderful local feminist sex positive sex toy store or online. And there are many wonderful resources of what to look out for when you are buying lube. But I would say that, you know, maybe stopping and lubing up or reapplying lube is not a part of your fantasy of frequent rough bottoming. But I would recommend making this slight concession. I really don't think that it's gonna cramp your style too much or the style of your partners to request a little bit of lube. I would definitely recommend using silicone lube, because unlike water-based lube, silicone lube is not absorbed into the body as quickly, so it's really great for like long epic fuck sessions. Of course, when using silicone lube, remember to, if you are using a silicone toy with silicone lube, always make sure that you put a condom over the toy, because silicone lube destroys silicone toys. So that would be definitely my first recommendation. Frequent, copious application of lube could completely transform your experience. And please get at me and let me know what you think about that, Chandler and everyone else. And I guess that my other piece of advice would be, if you are frequently finding yourself, what do you say here, sore, red, and irritated from yesterday's fucking to the point where you can't have the kind of sex that you want to have because you are so physically irritated in your hole, I would say, listen, I'm all for you just being this like size queen, bottom power, bottom queen, like get it, girl. Yes, absolutely. But okay, like let me put it this way. And by the way, I use girl as a gender non-specific greeting. If you love pizza, and I'm sure you do, like, let's say that your favorite kind of pizza is like a large, thick crust, extra sauce, all meat, deluxe pizza pie. That is what floats your boat, and nobody should shame you for loving the pizza that you love, and you should just eat the fuck out of that pizza to your heart's content. And probably not the best idea to eat that particular favorite dish for dinner every night of the week. So maybe after you've indulged in a really big sausage pizza, if you will, maybe the next day you want to think about like some roughage. You want to think about like some brown rice and kale, because brown rice and kale are also awesome.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
And variety is the spice of life. So to walk the metaphor back, if I think that you should listen to your body, holes are fantastic, elastic places, and they really can take quite an extraordinary amount. And you really enjoy being in a situation where you are maybe pushing yourself to take as much as you can possibly take. And I totally get that. And I want that for you, Chandler. I really do. And, I think that if, you know, after a like really intense bout of rough bottoming, you know, maybe the next day, like think about like getting it in the butt, or maybe think about topping, or maybe think about oral sex, or maybe like think about what kinds of kinks that you like, or maybe even think about like really just having an amazing intimate snuggle life as like part of your like sexual menu to bring things full circle and wrap it up. So in conclusion, this has been kind of fun actually talking to myself at my desk and imagining you all listening and taking notes, I'm sure, and hope. In conclusion, lube, love it, use it, and variety is the spice of life. A long menu with lots of options for your sexual repertoire, to mix metaphors, and let me know what you think of that feedback, Chandler, at Patreon, where we talk to each other all the time and are totally having a party. And anybody who's listening and hasn't already pledged, you can do so by going to patreon.com/TinaHorn. That's P-A... Oh, God. How is it spelled? That's patreon.com/TINAHORN. Thanks for going with me on this wild experiment, y'all. And now, back to my conversation with Milka Halili. Why are people into stories?
What do you think about the stories that get told in erotica and porn? Do you think that... What do you think there is to learn from the stories that tend to get told over and over again in erotica and porn?
Yeah. I feel like it's telling that a lot of archetypes and, like, myths are just, you know, they're staying with us over time. And I think the interesting thing is, like, although there is that thread, I feel like with each individual person that touches it or marks it with their own creativity, it becomes, like, their own story in a way. So we can have this larger thread or this large story, this bigger story that we all share, but we can all have our own version or dream of it. That's my positive outlook on it.
What's your negative outlook on it?
That it's hurtful and harmful, and that it can be deviated more.
The kinds of stories that tend to get told over and over again are harmful.
When people who are marginalized, their stories don't get told, or they're starting to feel invisible, that's when I feel like an upsurge needs to happen. There needs to be space for different stories to be told. Not necessarily that the ones that are there should be gone.
Totally. So do you feel that the stories that get told in porn are told by people who are not marginalized in the rest of the culture at large?
Yeah, sometimes. Well, just coming from it as a person of color who feels really privileged, and a queer person who feels really privileged in some way, like, even though I identify as gender fluid and trans, like, I still can pass as a woman, and I don't mind being identified as a woman, so it doesn't really cause much strife in my life. And although I'm of color, I know how to code switch, and I know how to navigate white spaces, and I've gotten really comfortable with it. So, but advocating for people who can't, like, I see a lot of frustration in marginalized spaces, specifically, like, fat or black, queer, trans women specifically. I see them not feeling heard, and I feel like that's really harmful.
Yeah, definitely in porn, there needs to... As I was saying before, there are a lot of stories about trans women that are perpetuated in porn that show a very limited fantasy about what it means to be a trans woman or what it means to have sex with a trans woman. Yeah, and women too. I mean, I think that it's always so interesting. It's like, do we tell the same stories over and over in porn because those are, like you were mentioning, like myths, mythological archetypes that humans have been, it's been shown that humans have been drawn to for millennia because the different kinds of gods and the different kinds of stories and Star Wars and blah, blah, blah. Or is it that a lot of the people who produce porn, they want to make money and these stories have been proven to sell, and so they just keep making them instead of trying to tell different stories? I mean, I suppose the same could be said of Hollywood and TV and novels, and maybe there's a little bit more room for perspective in writing, but
I feel like, yeah, it's like a little bit of both, and I feel like that's why people are starting their own things and becoming entrepreneurs. And I mean, that's what artists have always done. And I feel like it's becoming more popular because of online business. I feel like people are not looking for a big like head media person to tell their story for them. They're just saying, fuck it, I have a phone, I have YouTube, I'm just gonna tell my own story.
Yeah. Do you think that that is gonna fuck with this sort of basic bitch idea of of what sexuality is, that more and more people are saying, this is my subjective experience of sexuality, and putting that out into the world and being consumed, and maybe even being consumed in a way that where people are looking for something to turn them on, and then they're turned on by that thing, and that's a really good way to like ingrain it into their brains.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying?
I mean, well, like, I get off on stories, right? So I would go to YouTube to watch people read stories, and I got off on that. So.
Yeah, read sexual stories?
Just stories. Like, especially creative nonfiction stories. Like, if I feel like I can feel a person or vibe with them, then, like, even if it's just, like, part of their persona, like, I will sexualize that persona and get off on it.
That's so awesome. I mean, it makes me just think that part of what this is about is wanting to connect with humans and empathize with them. And if you, especially if you are coming from a place of sort of trying to figure out where you are on the asexuality spectrum, that the just because you're asexual doesn't mean that you don't want connection with other humans.
Yes.
And just because you're asexual, again, it sounds like somewhere on the spectrum in a fluid way, which is awesome. That if you are asexual, that you are, that doesn't mean that you don't want the very particular kind of intimacy that erotica, that erotic and kinky things can sometimes facilitate for some folks. Does that make sense? You're
that
nodding.
That makes so much sense. I'm nodding so much. Yeah, I mean, I just love people, and I love connecting to people, and I just see so much benefit in learning how to connect with people on all dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like learning about somebody's story, like taking them as a whole, complete human being, seeing all of their sides, and like crafting it into a character profile that I can create a game around and role play with to create like healing and transformation and just like fun, you know, and pleasure. I feel like that really, that's very healing, especially in like this crazy world we live in. And coming from someone who deals with PTSD on a daily basis, I feel like I've had so much healing from not just kinky sex or, you know, negotiating boundaries and consent, but also being able to relate who I am in all of this as well, and feeling identified with the process.
What do you think of the stereotype that men, and I say this, you know, strictly within the stereotype, masculine folks are more attracted to visual porn, and women are more attracted to erotica, because women care about stories and emotion, and men just care about seeing things going into holes, and they don't even care.
Well, the way that I feel about that is that it's complete bullshit, because that's not my experience of men or women at all.
Mine neither.
Yeah, it's a cute story, I guess. It would be great to fetishize and put it in a scene, but like outside of that.
So, not so much. you mean like taking this stereotype and then like blowing it out of proportion and like putting it into a scene and fucking with it. I love that. Now you're really singing my song. How would you do that?
Just like make it really outlandish and campy and just like hit it over the head, you know? Like, show up in drag, and I'd probably be the high femme in that scene, you know? And have, I don't know, whoever would want to be the man, doesn't have to be a man. Like, male-bodied or whatever.
Yeah, the person who's playing the role of the man can be of any gender, yeah.
Of any. Because even with my Skype show client, who's been my slave for almost 3 years now. He'll call me master or mistress.
Cool. I'm imagining a really funny scene where a client has fetishized the idea of women being turned on by stories, and you in high femme drag with like really big hair, like Dolly Parton hair, and like bubblegum pink, like press on nails, and like just laying around in your bed, like doing a Skype show, and like making your client, like dominating your client by making him tell you sexy stories, like while you masturbate to them, but then like yelling at him that it's not a good enough story, and that he needs to have more details in the story, and he needs to have better suspense and plot development.
You're being trite.
You're being trite. No, go back. I don't like that trope. I'm not even wet anymore. Now you have to start over. Oh my god. Should totally start a ring, a web ring of storytelling.
I fully support this.
Oh my gosh. Great. This is how we'll make our millions. I love the idea of your response being like, well, let's just make a campy extreme out of it. What is it like having a slave? Oh, a Skype client slave.
It's great. I go a little batty if I can't be mean to someone. And I also can't just be mean out of the blue. I really, like, with everything, I really need to have a rapport and a history to feel engaged. Otherwise, I just get bored. Chasing one high after the next. It's just easier to have a thread.
Yes. Also, when people want you to just be mean, it's like you haven't earned the right for me to pay enough attention to you.
It's true.
To be mean. Being mean takes a lot of energy.
A lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't want to have to self-care my top self after each and every engagement like that. I guess that's why I'm sexually attracted to stories, too. It's just easier. The come-down's easier. I don't need to, you know, check in, like, as intensely with myself and the other person.
That's interesting. People understand that you need a denouement after the climax.
Yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Intuitively.
We can't just be having orgasms all day, every day.
Can't we? You know, it makes me think about clients who, like, role-play clients that I've had who show up at the door in character, which is fine in certain circumstances, especially if you've seen them before and you've negotiated and you know their limits and you know that they're not going to push the time or do anything whack. So that's, like, totally fine. And the person is just, like, shows up super turned on, super in subspace, super in character, like, locked in. And then you're like that for an hour. And then they come, and, like, the second that they come, they're like, oh, cool, so, like, you know. Have you seen the new Batman trailer? Batman versus Superman? Sports.
And at that point, I'm like, get away from me! I don't want to have pillow talk.
Yeah,
my pillow talk is meditating for the next 3 hours.
Yeah, don't let the door hit your ass on the way out. Bye, Felicia. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And I get it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have that total, speaking of male and female stereotypes, I have that total, what is associated with men biologically. I somehow have that, instant, like, refractory period, like, after orgasm, where, like, if I'm watching porn, I'm like, God, like, close the laptop, like, not because I'm, like, disgusted with myself or ashamed or grossed out, but just, like, oh my God, a second ago, this was all I wanted to, like, concentrate on, and now I'm, like, I don't want to see this anymore. It, like, looks completely different.
I get the same way.
Yeah. Speaking of porn, you know, I find that I really relate to you. I mean, just in the sense of, like, the porn that I'm attracted to. Like, I could watch, like, 100 videos of people having sex, but I want to know why they're having sex, and it doesn't need to be a high concept novel of a of motivations, but it could just be because he's there to fix the cable. It could just be because she's a cheerleader, like, you know, but if I don't see that, then I can't get into it.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's because I'm a lady. I think it's because I'm a pervert.
I think so, too.
Do you find... do you like watching porn?
Yeah, I do. I love it.
What kind of porn do you like?
If I need a quickie, I'll go for, like, something really just, like, heterosexual and, like, easy. Just something really easy.
Yeah.
Like, in and out. But I really... I prefer to watch porn of people I know. I know for some people that's, like, a weird line.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, hey, it's there. It's your art. Like, I'm proud of the art that I've made. I feel like I want to see other people's art, too. So.
Do you mean porn with people that you know that they have done professionally and that is available online? Or do you mean, like, sharing, like, private sex tapes with friends or, like, seeing them on, like, amateur sites or something like that?
Both.
Yeah.
Mostly professional, but when I was in the Bay Area, specifically when I was more open and poly, I would do that with my friends. We'd film each other, we'd share films, and there would be, like, amateur porn nights.
Fun!
Yeah.
That's really fun. I like that because then the appeal of watching the amateur porn, which the, like, amateurness is, like, part of the story of what you're watching, right? Like, the fact that there's not, like, production values to signify that these people are performing and that, I think that that is very appealing to people, but so often the appeal of that story gets tied up in non-consent, right? Like, the naughtiness of watching, like, something that is supposed to be private that you are not supposed to see, or that, like, even, like, watching, like, amateur sites or tube sites where people have, like, uploaded things ostensibly for people to see, but also, like, maybe it was stolen and like, uploaded unconsensually, and that, like, people find that appealing. So I like the idea that you set up things for people to, like, enjoy that, but when it was, like, explicit consent.
Yes. Yeah. In that way, I prefer to work with friends, and, you know, when you have friends, you're sharing a shared history, a shared story. So I like to work with people who I could foresee myself building friendships with.
Yeah. That was one thing that I really liked about making porn in the Bay Area in the, like, early, late aughts, was that I would, like, meet a new friend and be like, do you want to get paid to have sex? And then now, like, there are some folks who I know who I'm, like, still friends with, you know, like, 6 or 7 years later, and it's like, oh, yeah, when we first met, we, like... Did this scene, and I almost forgot about that, you know. But it can be a fun way to relate to certain friends that way.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, are there role plays that you like to do at work?
Yeah, I really like to show up as myself and then go through this transformation of being more femme.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be in the same session. It can just be my showing up as I am and then eventually building a story together and working out how I will show up as femme.
Cool.
I also just like to feel, like, one main narrative for me, like, this is a thread that just follows me, is not necessarily, even though I express myself as a woman, not identifying as a woman,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm identifying more as a femboy or, like, or a man, and then showing up to these sites and putting on this femme drag and feeling kind of embarrassed and humiliated a little bit, and just, like, made really uncomfortable, and I get really shy when I'm femme,
because
I just, it doesn't really feel like me, but I'm supposedly, like, this, like, pretty cute young lady. And it's awkward. And then to perform, specifically, my favorite is to mean toppy women. like that for me, like the true femmes, you know, like that for me is like, okay, that's cool. That's one of my favorites for sure.
Cool. It's interesting when you say that. It's not that being femme is inherently humiliating, yeah. but that you're coming at it from this sort of skewed gender place of being like, I don't necessarily identify with this, but I don't necessarily not. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I worship femmes. Like, yeah. I think they're badass. I love how they show up in the world. I think they take a lot of shit, and they do it gracefully and with a lot of beauty. And just all of the, you know, all the physical work and the time and energy that someone takes into being femme, it's just, I'm just like, damn, I'm going to bow down to that.
Word, I feel you. Yeah. And then you're like, oh, I have the power to do it too. Kind of.
Yeah.
Do I? I don't know, sometimes.
I just want to, you know, be a boy and burp and hump things. Like, I don't want to wear lipstick.
But you do kind of sometimes want to wear lipstick, it seems like.
I like dressing up. I'm a femboy. I'm a princess sometimes. It happens.
Well, right. It makes sense that, you know, that when you're in femme, it's not like a confirmation of your femininity. It's like a femininity inscribed on top of the more like boyish masculine identity that feels a little bit more like what you are like at home.
Yes, my baseline.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I relate to that. And sometimes you have to be seen as a boy in order to feel comfortable being in high femme, or you need to be seen as a boy doing high femme instead of a like cis confirmation of feminine identity.
Yeah, that like killed me to do that, especially since I was kind of in the closet about it for a while. It just took too much out of me to perform that all the time and to not have a place like my own inner sanctuary where I felt like I could show up as my full self.
Do you like wearing other kinds of costumes besides a sort of high femme persona?
I kind of, there's like my, that's like my clean look, and then there's like my messy, like 13-year-old punk rock girl look.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
So even within the high femme persona, there's different caricatures. Can you talk about some of them? So there's like a clean cut one, and then there's like a, like, kinder whore, like 90s.
Yeah, and then
look, riot girl look.
Yeah, and then I have like kind of, I guess, like, hipster skater girl, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, hippie-like. Yeah, there's just, like, so many. I like looking sporty.
I love so you hip-hop. Basically are all the Spice Girls, is what you're saying here now. You have a look for every Spice Girl. As we know, that's one of the Joseph Campbell ancient archetypes, is the each spice, the ginger and the...
Oh, so into Spice Girls growing up.
Yeah.
So it makes sense.
For sure. are there other characters that you like to play? Like, do you like to be a nurse? Do you like to be a mommy or a daddy? Do you like to be a schoolgirl? Do you like to be a secretary? Do you like to be a pirate? Do you like to be a puppy or an animal? Like, are there animal stories that you like to tell?
Like, yeah, I like to be a... Well, in the past, I've liked to be a kitten.
Nice.
For sure.
What kind of kitten?
A black cat.
Uh-huh. Like a feral no black cat. No hesitation. Did you say feral? A feral black cat? Uh-huh.
Like a street cat. Yeah, and I sometimes like being a mom or a dad, mommy, daddy. I eventually want to do Tuxedo Mask from Sailor Moon.
Oh my god.
Because I'm convinced Sailor Moon may be gay.
Doesn't she... Okay, I'm going to nerd out for a second. Doesn't she call him sort of like a... Doesn't she use like the like female diminutive in Japanese to talk to him. Is this ringing a bell? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised because they genderfuck all the time in that show.
Doesn't it? I loved Sailor Moon when I was an adolescent.
Yeah.
And I would watch the dubbed version and the subtitled version. I would, like, send away for the subtitled ones. And they would come, like, on, like, someone's, like, dubbed video thing with, like, a handwritten label. Anyway, yeah, like, you say Chan at the name, at the end of the name. Like, Tina Chan. To sort of say, like, you're my lady friend. Okay. Not, like, a, like, girlfriend, but, like, you're my friend who's a lady. And she would call Tuxedo Mask, or what is his name when he is not Tuxedo Mask?
I forget now.
I'm going to say it's like Darian or something.
Yeah, Darian, I think.
And I just remember reading that, and it's like, it's something that like linguistically is like, sort of like a weird cultural joke, but that does not translate because we don't put like masculine, feminine. I mean, but I guess it's like if you were calling someone cutie. Right? Like, it sort of makes sense to, like, call a female friend cutie, but to, like, call a male friend cutie is, like, kind of gay.
I guess so.
Man, okay, anyway, so I just started talking about Sailor Moon, but you want to do a Tuxedo Mask costume that is so hot.
Yeah.
He's so debonair.
He is. I like that dapper look, too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like, what else do you like about Tuxedo Mask?
His cape and the flowers. I'm all about giving away these flowers for my birthday. I just gave like everybody who was sharing space with me a rose and a kiss on the cheek just for being there.
Oh my god, that's very Tuxedo Mask.
That was my gift to myself. Yeah,
self-care like a boss. amazing. Well, listen, while we're wrapping up, I would love for you to talk a little bit about your chapter in Jisley's new anthology Coming Out Like a Porn Star, which I creative directed.
Yes.
And also have an essay in.
You do, and you're reading with me.
Yes, at Blue Stockings.
January 9th.
I think this will come out before that, but if not, you missed it. but you should check out Coming Out Like a Porn Star. And tell me about your chapter. Like, give people like a little like sort of enticement to check out the book and check out your chapter in it.
Sure. I wrote about using my birth name, my first and middle birth name, for my stage name in porn, coming out to my father through Skype. And
interesting. Since you use Skype so much at work.
Yep. And being fisted by Ms. Berlin in Electro Sluts.
Awesome. That is a great teaser. I've read it and I feel teased.
Oh.
That makes it's like teasing me to go back and read it again. Cool. And is there anything else coming up for you that you want to plug?
Oh man, aside from my blog, which I'm going to be putting a lot of energy into.
Which is, what's the URL for that again?
It's slutsmartsoul. .com.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
No, that's it. Just if you want to follow me, look me up on Twitter. That's where I do most of my postings. It's at milkaorbaceto. At milkaorbaceto or at milkahalili.
Will you spell those for us right now?
Yeah. It's Milka, M-I-L-C-A-H, Halili, H-A-L-I-L-I. And Orbacedo, O-R-B-A-C-E-D-O. And I think I'm going to make a Twitter for Slut Smart Soul.
Nice.
It should be easier.
Why do you have the two different ones?
When I started out, it was trying to... I was trying to divide my writer persona and my porn performer persona.
How's that working out?
Meh.
Yeah.
it's awkward now because I have followers on both, but I feel like I should just encourage everybody to follow Slut Smart Soul. Just condense it all.
Yeah. Good strategy.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I like following you, and I am so excited to read more of your writing. And I am... Oh, and you're going to come to my Dirty Talk workshop.
I am. I'm so excited.
At Please, here in New York in Park Slope. I was just interviewed for the Park Slope Stoop.
Ooh.
Which I felt very scandalous about. I felt like... Oh, all the, like, classic Park Slope parents like going to read this newsletter where I'm like talking about anti-oppression in dirty language. But so that was a funny bit of press. But I'm excited about that. Do you like talking dirty, or are you like curious about like learning more in the class, or
both? I'm also a very shy person, so mm-hmm. it'll be interesting.
What do you want? What do you, if you could like curate something about the workshop, what would it be? Like, what do you want to see in a dirty talk workshop?
I guess for me personally, like how to deal with emotional blocks around feeling like shy or hesitant. Yep.
What has worked for you in the past when you're feeling shy or hesitant?
Breathing, getting back in my body. Sometimes if someone just slaps me, that also works.
That's what I'm going to tell them in Park Slope. Don't hit your kids. Do hit your partner with consent.
Yes.
Kids cannot consent. Don't hit kids. Anyway, I went there. I know what you mean. Sometimes being slapped across the face is just the reset button I need. Cool. Actually, that's really good advice. I think sometimes I get caught up in talking about language and I forget to remind people to, get back in their bodies with breathing. So that's a good one. Cool. What's your favorite dirty word?
Oh, my favorite dirty word.
What's your favorite one to use at work?
Right now, I guess it's slut. I mean, that makes sense, right?
It's a perennial favorite. Definitely my favorite.
Yeah.
It never gets old.
Yeah, it never gets old.
Cool. What do you like about the word slut?
I just like the hissing sound at the beginning and like and it's like how it kind of just like abruptly ends and then you're like, ah, fuck. It's almost like a slap to the face.
Slut. You're totally right. Well, I can't think of a better note to end on, so thank you so much for going deep and talking super nerdy about language and storytelling and creative nonfiction with me. I appreciate it a lot.
Yes, this was so much fun. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to episode 33. Follow at Tina Horn's Ass on Twitter. Subscribe and write us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And visit wiredpeopleintothat.com to subscribe to our newsletter and listen to the archives of seasons 1 and 2. As ever, Why Are People Into That is produced and hosted by yours truly, Tina Horn. Our theme song is by Pine from Oakland, California. Our website was designed by Justin Levesque, and this project is now sponsored by my generous and very dateable patrons. Get in on this at patreon.com/TinaHorn. Until next time, I'll be choosing my own adventure.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.